Hey Mason, July 9th, 2026. Today we are starting with a quick radar briefing to cover the newest research we have kept on file, followed by our weekly native language technology roundup. We are looking closely at how community-governed data structures are changing the way we approach large language models. We will also discuss recent developments in optical character recognition for legacy manuscripts to ensure that older texts are being digitized with high accuracy. It is a busy week for sovereignty-focused tech, so let us get straight into the radar briefing to see what the latest papers are telling us about grounded retrieval. Recent research highlights a growing movement toward making large language models more reliable and culturally grounded. A key theme involves improving how these models handle information through retrieval-augmented generation, which is a method of grounding model responses in specific external documents. Felix Feldman and several colleagues conducted a systematic evaluation of how different retrieval configurations and the faithfulness of those retrievals affect the quality of answers. This work is highly relevant for building systems that must remain strictly grounded in community-approved texts to ensure accuracy and prevent hallucinations. The challenge of linguistic diversity and cultural preservation is also a central focus in recent literature. Aparna Madhva and her co-authors argue for rethinking artificial intelligence through the lens of cultural heritage, specifically addressing the difficulties of building models for complex, underrepresented languages. This mirrors the core mission of building sovereign language tools for the Lakota people. Similarly, research by Darina Dementieva and a team of researchers explores how mathematical reasoning evaluations often fail to account for low-resource languages, highlighting a critical gap in how we measure intelligence across different linguistic landscapes. There is also significant progress in how models transfer knowledge between languages to support those with less available data. Andrea Alfarano and several other researchers studied how reasoning capabilities developed in English can improve performance in low-resource languages, which provides a roadmap for data-efficient adaptation. This concept of cross-lingual transfer is further explored by Lukmal Ilyas and Nevidu Jayatilake, who focused on moving knowledge from Sinhala to Devhay to improve speech recognition. Finally, researchers are tackling the specific difficulties posed by unique writing systems and scripts. Berte Bayarsaikan and colleagues introduced a method called cognitive pivot translation to handle Mongolian, which uses both a traditional script and a modern one. This work on managing script-induced ambiguity is vital for any project involving legacy texts or complex orthographies. Together, these studies emphasize that the path toward truly inclusive artificial intelligence requires moving beyond high-resource English models and toward specialized, culturally aware, and linguistically diverse architectures. As we look at the shifting landscape of digital power, several recent developments highlight the tension between large-scale technology and the specific needs of indigenous communities. This tension is perhaps most visible in how language is being integrated into global platforms. In New Zealand, Google has announced a new partnership with Te Tauira-Hiri Te Reo Māori, which is the Māori Language Commission, to improve how Google Maps handles Māori place names. For years, users have complained about the incorrect pronunciation of Māori towns and cities. To fix this, Google trained a new text-to-speech voice using a native speaker over a period of roughly 6 months. This update is rolling out over a two-week period, with plans to eventually include streets and roads. Ngahi Hui Apanui Bar, the chief executive of the Māori Language Commission, described this as a step toward securing the future of the Māori language in the digital age. For Lakota language work, this serves as a reminder of the importance of phonetic accuracy in navigation and mapping. While this is a win for visibility, it also raises questions about who owns the voice. Even when the pronunciation is correct, the underlying infrastructure remains a corporate tool. It shows that while we can work with these giants to correct errors, the ultimate goal for many is to move beyond just being a feature in someone else's app and toward owning the tools themselves. This desire for self-determined storytelling is being realized on a more personal, community-driven scale in the American Southwest. George R. Joe, a Navajo former educator, has spent 3 years developing a mobile application called Tribal Trails. This is a GPS-activated audio tour designed to provide a native lens on historic routes, such as the drive from Gallup to Flagstaff or from Flagstaff to Phoenix. As people drive through these areas, the app narrates the cultural and historical context of Navajo, Zuni, and Acoma lands and landmarks. The goal is to correct the misconceptions that tourists often hold about native peoples. Mr. Joe is currently in the second phase of development, expanding the app to include segments for Albuquerque and Santa Fe. This project is a powerful example of what it looks like to use existing technology like mobile phones and GPS to reclaim a narrative. Instead of letting a generic map dictate the history of a landscape, the community provides the context. For Lakota speakers, this suggests a path where language and history are not just static data points, but living guides that travel with with the people and tell their own stories to the world. The broader philosophical debate around these technologies is being framed by scholars and advocates who argue that artificial intelligence must be built with indigenous knowledges rather than against them. During the recent celebrations of the 50th anniversary of National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Recognition Week in Australia, commentators highlighted the risk of artificial intelligence becoming another extractive force. The concern is that without strict frameworks, AI will simply harvest indigenous knowledge for the benefit of outside corporations. One example of how this can be done correctly was noted in regional Western Australia, where Aboriginal medical clinics are trialing artificial intelligence to assist in diabetic retinopathy screening. In this case, the technology is being used as a tool for community health, guided by the needs of the people it serves. The argument being made is that indigenous data sovereignty, specifically following principles like the CARE and OCAP frameworks, should not be treated as an ethical add-on or a suggestion. Instead, these principles must be the mandatory foundation upon which all AI systems are built. This means ensuring consent, giving credit where it is due, and ensuring that the benefits of the technology are returned to the community. This concept of sovereignty is being expanded into a complex three-way contest. A recent analysis suggests that we are seeing a struggle between state sovereignty, corporate sovereignty, and indigenous techno-sovereignty. Traditional views of sovereignty, which focus on the power of nation-states, are failing to capture how artificial intelligence actually functions. Power in the AI era flows through corporate-controlled infrastructure that often bypasses government regulation and ignores indigenous rights. However, there are models of resistance. The analysis points to Tehiku Media in New Zealand, which developed a Maori speech recognition model that is 92% accurate. This was not a gift from a tech giant, but a project driven by the community to ensure their language was represented on their own terms. The analysis calls for new architectures, such as data trusts and federated systems, that allow indigenous nations to maintain control over their data while still participating in the digital world. For Lakota developers, this reinforces the idea that building our own models is not just a technical challenge, but a political necessity to ensure we are not caught in the middle of a tug of war between states and corporations. Finally, the global conversation is turning toward the danger of participation without actual power. At a recent United Nations side event regarding artificial intelligence governance, experts examined the situation in South Asia. They questioned whether nations in that region are building genuine capacity or if they are simply creating a more sophisticated form of dependency on foreign technology. A major concern raised was how the ecological knowledge, territorial records, and oral traditions of indigenous and tribal communities are being pulled into artificial intelligence systems without any clear consent or accountability. Even though international standards like the International Labor Organization Convention 169 and the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples exist, there is often no clear actor held responsible when data is taken. This highlights a global pattern where indigenous knowledge is treated as a raw resource to be mined. As we work to build Lakota language tools, we must remain vigilant about this divide. It is not enough to simply participate in the digital economy. We must ensure that our participation includes the power to say no, the power to govern our own data, and the power to define how our knowledge is used by the world. That concludes our weekly roundup of the latest developments in native research and language technology. We have covered everything from new computational models to the vital work of community-led documentation. Thank you for joining us for this look at how technology and tradition intersect. I hope you found these updates insightful, Mason. We will be back next week with more stories from across the Indigenous digital landscape.